Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to another episode of the Championship Roundtable podcast. I'm your host, James Vickers. You can reach us at the show on Twitter at our new Twitter page, which is Championship Pod. And you can also follow my personal Twitter at _James Vickers, where I write for a Preston North End fan blog, and you can catch me on the show each week.
Hello. Add to confusion, I'm also James, but I am a QPR fan, James Evans. You can follow me on Twitter, Jim E. Evans, and I run We Are QPR TV, which is on YouTube and is also on Twitter.
Hi, everyone. My name's Thomas Boff. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, and unsurprisingly, I am a Wolverhampton Wanderers supporter. You can get us at wolvesblog.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/wolvesblog. At Wolvesblog or on facebook.com/Wolvesblog.
Yeah, cheers for joining me today, guys. Obviously, the big talking point of the week, Simon Grayson has left Sunderland now. The sort of job when he took over, I'm not going to sort of try and be bitter here as a Preston fan. He left us sort of on the first day of pre-season to go there, and it's not worked out for him. I wanted to get your thoughts firstly on, was it the right decision for them to sack him? And then secondly, following on from that, sort of the state they're in at the moment, is it really just sort of a poison chalice really for whoever does decide to take the job? We'll start with you first on this topic, James. Your thoughts, and then, you chip in as well, Tom.
Yeah, I had a quick look earlier, and apparently John O'Shea is even to be their next manager, which sort of says, which may go out the window, but it sort of says it all about Sunderland. It's kind of, it's just in complete turmoil there. I guess Grayson wanted to go to, sorry, James, a bigger club in terms of kind of, you know, our fan base and all of that. But I wouldn't have left Preston. There's a lot of good things going there to go to Sunderland. And I mean, who are they expecting to come in and kind of turn it round? They've just got at the moment the hallmarks of potentially dropping down another division, which is a terrible thing. But what they've done is they've done exactly what they did in the Premier League, now in the Championship, just flirted at the wrong end of the table. There doesn't seem to be any unity. The fans, there's a huge kind of discord amongst the fans and the club. And then if you look at the list of people that are kind of floating around it, I think Karanka might be on the list as well, whether he'd want to kind of go there. It's just crazy. I would have stuck with Grayson. He's kind of proven at this level and below as well. So if they would have struggled, he might have been able to get him back up. But from an incredibly selfish point of view, I'm kind of grateful that there are some teams that are struggling, because this league is a really, really, really hard league. And I think you could, if you're not one of the ones right up at the top, there's a lot of teams that could kind of be up for kind of going down. That's what I certainly thought about QPR beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it smacked in the summer of an actual common sense appointment. You were like, wow, they've gone out and thought, who knows the Championship? Who is able to assemble a team and work with players perhaps not of a, you know, high caliber quality and put a team together? And I thought it seemed like a good appointment. So, but then, you know, the 10 points, you know, 15 games, bottom of the table. I mean, I think even Sunderland in the turmoil they're in could have expected better than that. And so I think it's not massively surprising that they've given him the push. It's probably a little bit harsh, but I just find it hard to look at that squad of players and think he couldn't do better than 10 points from 15 games. So I haven't got a massive amount of sympathy for him, and I know, I do understand when people say about, you know, managers need time to put their stamp on things and get the team playing together. But I mean, Sunderland really don't want to go down to League One. And I don't think if he'd been handed that requirement at the start of the season, I'm guessing they probably said to him, we don't perhaps expect to be right at the top, you know, but we want to be consolidating that division and be seeing the right, you know, the right signs that we're moving in the right direction. So to be bottom of the table, 15, you know, after 15 games and, you know, the one win, is it? I mean, I'm not massively surprised by it, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I think definitely it's where they are in the table isn't where they want it to be. I definitely think, sort of, I agree with you there, Tom, that they, first season, they were never going to go straight back up. They weren't going to do a Newcastle or sort of to some extent how Burnley have sort of yo-yoed between the division in the last couple of seasons. I think this season for them was about consolidating that place in the division. But I think we covered it last week as well in the podcast. I think sort of their club is in such a mess at the moment that I think it was almost going to be in sort of an impossible task for Grayson to get it right straight away. I am quite surprised sort of just how bad they have done. But if you sort of look at the players that they've got, and they don't really have any, you know, sort of decent championship experience. And it's a club that over the last couple of years have just been used to losing week in, week out. And once you get that sort of mentality around the club, it is really difficult sort of to turn it around. So I think whoever does take the job next, whether it's John O'Shea, which, you know, obviously it's kind of a risky appointment, obviously it can't get any worse for them, they're going to have a job on their hands. But sort of looking down sort of the list of people who are, you know, sort of odds on, you've got John O'Shea, Ali McCoist, you know, they don't really sort of scream as names that are going to sort of turn their fortunes around. Neither has sort of particularly sort of any management experience in the championship. So I do think it's going to be a really difficult sort of ask to turn their fortune around. I do think they have got sort of a squad that is too good to go down. But, you know, how many times have we said that about teams either in the Premiership or the Championship? And, you know, football's not won on paper, as the old cliche goes. So I think they are in a real mess at the moment. And this next appointment for them is, sort of, I'd go as far to say, is going to make or break their season, whether they stay in the division or not. So it's going to be fascinating over the next couple of weeks to really sort of see what direction they go in and if their fortunes can turn around sort of with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd be interested. I don't know if Paul Lambert's been mentioned, but after he came in at Wolves and gave us that little bit of a lift last season when we were down near the bottom, and I think he'd probably be a good appointment for them. I don't know whether he's ruled himself out or they're interested in him, but he's out of work. I'd be surprised if they weren't looking at him, because he's a motivator as well. Someone will go in and he'll galvanise those players. So if I was Sunderland now, looking at some of the names you've talked about, if they could somehow get Paul Lambert to go there, I think that would be a very astute appointment for them. But I mean, the last team to go down from the Premier League straight down to League One was Wolves. So I'm reasonably well qualified to speak about this. And it was actually the best that ever happened to us, because, you know, we cleared the decks completely, got rid of basically all the players, got a great manager in Kenny Jackett who sorted everything out for us, got us back into the Championship, consolidated us, and now we've got the platform to be where we are now. So it's not all doom and gloom, even if the worst does happen to them, but they need to get it sorted out sooner rather than later, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. That sort of, obviously Preston have never been in the Championship, but that was a similar situation to what happened with us. We dropped down into League One with sort of players that were on far too much money for the level that they were playing at, and it was sort of, looking back now, the best thing that's ever happened to us. So obviously at the time, you know, gutted to go down, but cleared off the high earners, rebuilt the club. We got Simon Grayson in, who did sort of as good a job as Kenny Jackett did, sort of rebuilding the club from the bottom up, and got us back, and now we're sort of starting to establish ourselves as a Championship club again. Although sort of the last 5 or 6 weeks haven't, you know, particularly been the best. I do think sort of to go on to Preston, I think we do, you know, have a squad that is sort of good enough to stay in the division, and the large majority of that is down to Grayson coming in and rebuilding. So I think if you sort of apply the same to Sunderland, obviously it would be bad for them to go straight down into League One. But I do think sort of if you sort of fast forward 3 years, that could be sort of one of the best thing that's happened to them. And, you know, they've got a real opportunity then to rebuild. But sort of staying on the sort of the little subject, I suppose, of Preston, I wanted to ask you two, it's over the last few weeks for us, it's been an absolute nightmare with injuries. We've, I think now, I'll try and find the list as I'm talking, we've got 8 defenders out, sort of about a month or longer. So it's not just little niggles here and there. We've got Sean Maguire, our sort of most creative sort of forward, is out for 4 months with a hamstring operation. I just wanted to sort of ask you, has anything like this ever happened at your club? And sort of how do you think, or where sort of is the blame to lie? Is it sort of just pure luck that all our injuries have happened at once, or do you think there's going to be like an underlying factor of sort of the players not getting the rest, or Alex Neil overtraining them?
Well, it's funny actually, because earlier this season QPR had not quite to that number, but at one point in time they only had one centre half, and that was Alex Baptiste that we'd signed on a free from, oh, I think Borough, maybe Sunderland even, but a North East club. Because Nedim Manur made his 200th appearance, then his 201st appearance, picked up a really bad injury, was out. And then we got Stephen Caulker, who, I mean, who knows if he'll ever get his head in a space to play football again. Then Bidwell was out, Lynch was out, and Grant Hall was out with tendonitis. So all of our first choice centre halves were out. And then the only weird thing that kind of came of that was that Jack Robinson, who's barely played for a couple of years, a left back, has basically ended up playing centre half and has done a really, really good job. So I wouldn't say it's quite to the same scale, but I mean, it maybe, I think it's just a few things coming together. And if you do look at kind of the Saturday, Tuesday nature of the Championship, it is just unforgiving, the schedule. You know, if you have a busy month, you've played 7 games, and it's incredible. But that being said, if you can get a couple back and just sort of ride it out, I think that's why we kind of reverted quite a lot to 3 at the back with a couple of wing backs. So you know, we had right wingers playing kind of fullback, because kind of needs must, really.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's as regards who's to blame, it's very difficult. I mean, the temptation is always to think it's just bad luck, you know. But I suppose you dissect the injuries. Are they muscle strains? Are they kicks during the game? You know, I think Preston, to me, seemed like quite a high tempo, physical team, get in your faces. So if you play that way, you're always going to have a lot of players breaking down. That's just the way it is. I mean, I think Jurgen Klopp has come in for a lot of criticism over the years for a lot of his players because of the counter-pressing system he puts in place. And when Preston came to Molineux a few weeks ago, they were very, you know, high up the pitch, didn't give us any room to play.
And QPR played that way as well, in fairness, yeah. Actually. Yeah. So, you know, you might have a good point there, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's difficult, but it is devastating. I mean, I think injuries are one of the things that just don't get taken into account. I mean, when Wolves came back from League One into the Championship, we had such a good team. We had, at one point, when we had Sakho, Dicko and Afobe up front, I actually thought we're probably the best team in this league. But we had one run where we had a couple of players injured, and it just devastated our whole season, you know. And that's, managers can lose their jobs because of injuries. You know, teams who might be in the promotion mix end up lower mid-table because, as you both said, competitive division, there's like a piece of litmus paper between, you know, 90% of the team. So those little margins, they do make a massive, massive difference. So yeah, it is, but it's just, you know, that's just, you know, some seasons you tend to have an amazing record, and those seem to be the seasons that if you correlate them together, you're at the top of the table. So unlucky for you, mate, but I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was Middlesbrough, James, that Baptiste came from, because we had him on loan off them last season, so we could really do with him back now.
Sorry.
But yeah, it's
we signed him for nothing. We signed him for free as well, because of all the financial fair play stuff that's happened at QPR. So yeah, we were very grateful we got him.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised we didn't go back in for him really towards the end of last season, because he's quite a versatile defender who sort of for a few times last season for us played right back. Obviously, he can play centre back as well. And even though we were winning games at the start of the season, and we were, I think, third or fourth before we've gone on this run, I was sort of saying ever since transfer window shut that I do think we are light at the back, and it is going to be a real test when we we do get a couple of injuries. Obviously, I wasn't expecting us to get sort of 7 or 8 first-team defenders out injured when I said that. But it's been quite a weird one. We had sort of a makeshift back four together against Aston Villa on Wednesday night. And at half-time, Callum Woods and Josh Earle both go off with medial ligament injuries. It's going to keep them out for about a month.
That's not good.
You just see sort of the second half starting and two players coming on, and you're thinking Kevin O'Connor's coming on a left back, so you know that Josh Earle's not going to make it out. And then you see Gallagher, who's a midfielder, so you sort of think maybe one of the midfielders have picked up an injury. So when Callum Wood's number goes up, there was sort of that collective groan around the ground that, you know, oh, here we go again, more defenders out injured. And then we went on to Ipswich yesterday, and in the first half, Darnell Fisher, the right back, goes off injured. So I'd be a bit more sort of not as stressed if it was, you know, like two or three defenders, two or three midfielders, and like a striker that are injured. But literally, if you look for our squad, we've got one midfielder who's injured, one striker, and seven defenders. It's sort of, it's quite a hard one to put your finger on. Obviously, as Thomas mentioned, we do play quite a sort of a fast tempo, almost like a sort of a Liverpool or someone in that ilk that closed the ball down quickly and pressed the opposition. But sort of on that same end, it's the midfield that tends to do that. So I'm quite surprised that it has been sort of all the defenders that have been injured, really. But obviously, you know, it's no one's fault that players get injured. It's part and parcel of the game, and it's going to be a real test now for Alex Neil. I think probably his first big test as his sort of short tenureship as manager with us. So it will be interesting to see sort of how they come through that. And, you know, as you mentioned, James, sometimes out of that you can find one or two players who necessarily haven't played for you for a while who come good and really take their chance.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But sort of moving on to the next topic, obviously we've got another international break coming up. It's going to be quite good for us because none of our defenders have been called up because the majority are injured. So, you know, hopefully we can get one or two back before the next game. I just wanted to get your two thoughts on, obviously this is going to be the third one now of the season. You seem to get going again in the league and sort of most teams putting a run together, and then it's disrupted again by the international break. I just wanted to get your thoughts on, obviously it's not qualifiers, so we've got the friendlies now. Do you think that the friendlies should be taking priority over the league football and disrupting the flow of the league? Or what would your opinions be on it? Start with you first, James, on this one.
That's a really good question, and it's really tricky. I mean, for me, it's slightly loaded because kind of just my love for following Three Lions, following the England football team, has really diminished over the years, as a lot of fans have. So then when you realise, well, obviously, so they've qualified, so you want them to kind of get the best prep they can for next year. But you'd like to wonder if it could maybe be optional. But then, you know, how often do you get to play in a major tournament as a player? So most players would probably opt in. But that being said, the stuff that we're talking about in terms of injury problems, I think maybe you do need a break every now and then in the Championship, just simply to kind of just stop, kind of take a breath, gather, assess everything, because, you know, what you were listing just previously, it was exactly the same as QPR, probably like 5 or 6 defenders out and no one else around the rest of the squad, really, or around the rest of the pitch. And also I think if you are on a bad run of form, because the Championship can be so streaky in terms of performance, having a break can be great. it can be annoying if you are kind of on a winning run. But kind of having lost love of international football because I follow England, I always find it as a massive nuisance, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first started playing football, it's showing my age now, but if you're in the second tier, I don't think the game used to stop for international weekends. I might be wrong, stand corrected, because there wasn't as many international players. So it didn't used to be a problem that affected the championship, but now you've got probably just a sign of the quality of the league, really, and that it's a much more sort of cosmopolitan league. I mean, Wolves have got players jetting off all over the world, mainly to Portugal, obviously. But I don't mind it. I don't mind it, really. I suppose I look at it, particularly in a season where it looks like we're on a promotion campaign, as you sort of helps you break the season up into little sections of like four or five games, and then you have targets within that to try and achieve. It's kind of a bit of a rest period. I'm kind of indifferent to it, I suppose. But I think if you've got injuries, it's a good opportunity, like you say, to get players back, recover. And then if you haven't got a lot of players going out, I suppose it's a chance for the coach to come in and work with his players a bit more. So it's probably come at a good time for Sunderland in that respect, because they might be able to get a manager in and then get moving again. But generally speaking, I'd say I'm just indifferent to it.
Yeah, definitely. I think normally I'm sort of on the sort of the side of James in the fact that, you know, I'll still watch the England games, but my sort of passion for following international football over the last few years especially has sort of diminished with the sort of the lackluster performances at major tournaments by England. So normally I'm quite sort of downbeat when an international break rolls around, but this time, you know, we need players back, as simple as that. So I do think there's sort of the benefit of having a break. And as you mentioned, Thomas, it sort of does break up the season quite nicely, sort of thinking about it, that you can set yourself sort of targets over that sort of month and a half, four or five games, however long it is, and see where you are at the end of that. And it's a good chance to regroup and sort of assess sort of where you are and set another set of short-term targets, which sort of for a manager, I'd imagine sort of helps, rather than sort of planning out your season as one big sort of target. It gives you the chance to sort of focus, take each game as it comes and sort of kick on, you know, and put a little run together. So, I can definitely see sort of the benefits and the negatives of it. And, you know, I think after this one now, there isn't another one till sort of March time. So especially going over Christmas, it does give you a chance to, as we've mentioned, get these players back fit for what is probably the sort of the most demanding time of the season, sort of for a footballer. The games come thick and fast, and it's sort of the couple of months that can really shape your season. And you come out sort of January, February time, and you get sort of a good idea of who's going to finish where in the table, and which teams are sort of in danger of going down or possibly going up. So I think get through this one, you know, get the majority of your squad sort of ready. And then you know, as we said, get into the sort of the testing months then over Christmas. But sort of to touch on now, obviously, each team's had two games this week. We had a set of midweek games, which, you know, seems to be more often than not these days with getting all the games in, especially in a World Cup year where the season finishes slightly earlier. We'll start with you first, James. Obviously, two games for QPR. One, a tricky look, or both tricky on paper, home against Sheffield United and then away at Forest. Sort of talk us through the week and which players over the course of the two games have impressed you sort of throughout the week and which have disappointed?
Yeah, well, sort of the sublime to the QPR really is kind of sort of this week. I mean, obviously, the win at home against Sheffield United were quite, you know, clearly, I mean, obviously I've seen them on the TV and stuff. They're clearly a good side. And we took the lead through the strangest of goals. It was such a weird kind of coming together with Jamal Blackman and Carter Vickers, and then it just presented itself to Idrissa Silla, and then QPR were great for the next 85 minutes. They were just really solid, and you could see United were dangerous, but we played really well, and it was just one of those nights where you're thinking, God, there was like everyone played decently, and then we move on to Nottingham Forest, which is, if there's ever a bogey ground, it's the bogey ground of all bogey grounds for QPR. We've never won there in the league or in the cup, never won there. I think the first time we played against Forest was like in the early 30s, 1933. That's the 29th attempt, in the league that we've been winless. I think 33 or 34 attempts overall. We went behind after 15 minutes, like maybe 12 minutes or so. Tyler Walker and the QPR away support quadrupled in the hope of finally kind of banishing this hoodoo at the City Ground. But it just said everything about QPR, really. Can't come off the back of obviously Wolves and Sheffield United, teams that are pretty much the top two, to then go to Forest, who are playing well at the moment, and just get beaten 4-0. It was it summed everything up about being a fan and supporting that club in particular. And in terms of it, who's impressed, Idrissa Silla is a funny one, but he's always there to score goals. I don't think he's scored a goal further than like 8 yards or something absolutely crazy. And disappointed, it'd be quite harsh, because I just think it just went badly. It was a real bad day at the office on Saturday. That was a week in a QPR fan's life, followed by the financial fair play the week before. Classic Rangers, all over the shop.
Yeah, you sort of touched on it there a bit, sort of like classic Rangers. You now have the same record as us in the league, so 5 wins, 6 draws, 5 defeats. Are you sort of looking now to sort of start to put a run together and get that consistency that would sort of shoot you up the table? Obviously, it's so tight in the division at the moment. Is it now for QPR, like as I said, about finding that consistency and starting to put runs together?
Well, you know what, James? I think we've only lost once at home, and that was to Fulham 2-1, and we very nearly equalised in like the 97th minute. So our home form is actually really solid. We just haven't won away in 15 attempts. So that is something that really needs to be addressed. I think the last time we won away was at Birmingham, and that was pre Redknapps. I think it was still Zola, and that is the biggest thing. If we can actually start to just get a win away on the road, then maybe we can build up a little bit more momentum. But kind of where we are is, I don't think we are much better than that unless we sort out our away form. But even then, I can't see us being playoff contenders despite the results before Forest. I can't see, which I don't think the squad's got the quality personally.
You think you're going to, because of this financial fair play stuff now and the knock on from that, do you think you're just destined to wander aimlessly around the Championship for the seasons to come?
And do you know what, Thomas? It sounds weird, but that might not necessarily be a bad thing. I think perhaps, but it's not boring supporting QPR. I'll say that. But maybe we need a little bit of time where it's a bit boring, where we just kind of just, because what Fernandes has promised for a very long time, he spent 250 million the wrong way at that club. And we still rent our training ground, which is on the end of Heathrow Airport. And we still got nowhere near getting our stadium built with the things that were being promised. And I love Loftus Road, but it's cramped and it's creaking. And if QPR ever wants to try and be in the Premier League again, those are the things that really need to be sorted. And in a weird sort of circularity for what we were talking about much earlier about Sunderland, the last time we went down to League One, Ian Holloway took over, and after a couple of seasons, Ian Holloway got us up and kind of laid the foundations there. And now we've got Holloway again, and he's kind of, his back's to the wall again, because he's clearly got no money to spend. It's a weird one. I love Ian Holloway, but sometimes he frustrates me. But I think he is the man to just kind of keep us on the path that we're going at the moment, because there's a lot of chaos still swirling around out off the pitch as well.
Yeah, and sort of over to Wolves now, Tom. Great week for them. Two sort of tricky looking games on paper that could sort of really have tested the squad. Obviously, you went away to Norwich in midweek, and then you had a difficult looking sort of home game on paper on Friday night against Fulham, who have struggled a bit this season, but they're still one of the teams that you'd expect to be up at the top of the league or sort of there and thereabouts come the end of the season. Sort of talk us through the two games, your sort of opinions on how they went and which players impressed and disappointed for you.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously came into that Norwich game off the back of losing to QPR, as I'm sure James will take pleasure in reminding me about. The thing is about this Wolves team that I'm quite impressed by, we've now, I think we've lost three games this season. We lost to Cardiff, Sheffield United, which isn't massively unsurprising, those two, and then QPR, which is a bit more surprising. But we've responded in each of those times and put together good results. And that's what I'd say gives me confidence that we're still going to be right up there come May, because we, even when we lose games, we have good chances. I think against QPR, a 1-1, that game was quite poised. I think QPR were on the front foot for much of the second half, but Wolves had the chances to go 2-1 up, and then I think it goes a different way. So I felt confident
in all the games. Very easily could have done. It was a Bonatini. Did he hit one over? I felt like that was your chance. And then we sort of got on the front foot.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said in my match report after, we won't be the last team to lose to a Matt Smith header. You know, that's just part of Championship football, isn't it? So I didn't feel we played badly, you know, awful at QPR. We certainly weren't on our best, but I didn't, you know, I felt with a little bit of luck our way and a little bit less luck their way, we could have got the result. So Norwich, I was fearful of that game because Carrow Road midweek, I think a lot of teams would look at that and think, I don't really fancy it on the back of a defeat. But, you know, he made a few changes to the team. Norwich came out quickly, pressed us kind of like QPR did. But we kind of weathered that storm, and then we always looked dangerous on the counter. We always looked, every single time we went forward, we looked like we were going to get through. But then I suppose annoyingly, I'd say it's for both games, Norwich and Fulham, those teams will be frustrated because they've given us set-piece goals. Wolves played a lot of good football this year. So to give away, and that's what teams will probably be fearful of, that we're going to play through them. So to give away set-piece goals has got to be pretty gutting. And Norwich left a bloke, we've got centre half who's about 6'5" playing for us. They left him completely unmarked in the middle of the goal, and he gave us the lead early on. And then it just, we create so many chances on the break. It's just a case of whether we were going to ever get that second goal or they were going to, you know, sucker punch us. And thankfully we got the second goal, and we were deserved winners in that game. Although Norwich were quite lively, I felt. John Ruddy didn't make a save all night. So I was comfortable with that. And then Fulham on Friday, that looked a tough game because Fulham play good football as well. So it was a interesting game in prospect, because most teams that have played Wolves this season have just looked to shut us down and then, you know, get us on the counter or get us out of possession and make things happen that way. Fulham were always going to be a different beast. They were going to try and play their way through us. And they did. They played really well for them. But unfortunately, they didn't start playing well until they were 2-0 down. Again, two set-piece goals, which they're going to be gutted about. Never really gave them the chance to get into it. And then for some reason, I felt their manager, Jokanović, he made a couple of changes after half-time. And that just seemed to make them weaker and take the wind out of their sails when I thought they might find a way back into the game. So it turned out to be a very routine victory. So over the two games, I'm obviously very happy to get two wins and really cement our place at the top of the table. It's a bit disappointing that Sheffield United came roaring back to score four against Fulham yesterday. They would have been very happy campers, had that not been the case. But I'm still confident going into that international break. Star performers, difficult to look past Bonatini. I think he scored now in his last six games for Wolves in a row. Fantastic records. He's been a wonderful player for us, not just the goals, but he's brought all the other sort of ball players into the game through holding the ball up and making good layoffs, intelligent runs. So he's been a real shining star. Difficult to really pick anyone who's struggled when you're top of the table and playing quite well.
Is he on loan, Bonatini, or have you signed him?
He's on loan from the footballing giants that are Al Hilal in Saudi Arabia. But
wow.
He did come through the Juventus system, so he's got some pedigree. I don't know. He's one of these. He's a George Mendes client, so he's ended up where he's been parked, and we've benefited from it. But, he looks a great player. I mean, quite a lot.
Yeah, he is. He's a good player. He's perfect for this division at the moment.
Yeah, he is. He looks very comfortable. So, I mean, we're playing well. I mean, I don't really want more to add at the moment. It's just wanted to carry on. We don't want to get, like you've had, James, we don't want to get injuries. That's what we want to avoid, because that's what's going to test. And honestly, I hate sounding arrogant, but I've seen a lot of Championship football over the last, you know, Wolves have predominantly been in the Championship for my life. But this Wolves team, I think, is the best. It's definitely the most technically proficient Wolves team I've ever seen. And I do think we've got the best team in the division. So I think if we stay injury free, I think we get promoted from this league. So just hoping that we can just maintain that status quo for as long as possible.
Yeah, obviously you touched on it there that sort of if you can keep players fit, you've got an excellent chance of going up. The two games against sort of Norwich and Fulham, obviously tricky starts for both of them to the season, but they're probably two of the best squads in the division. Do you think sort of at the moment that your squad is sort of that good and sort of head and shoulders sort of above every other squad in the division? Sort of like I'm struggling, sort of looking down maybe Middlesbrough, but you know, they're not exactly setting the division alight, even though they're fifth. Do you expect to keep up the good run of form, even if you do have injuries? Obviously, you've got some great players on the bench. And sort of is this sort of the form that you expect the sort of the team to carry on for the rest of the season now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've got, obviously, every team's got its best players, haven't they? I mean, you've got Ruben Neves in midfield. £15 million from Porto. He's just been called up to the full Portugal squad. You know, he is an outstanding player. A lot of teams have done a good job of shutting him down because he's been targeted, because they recognise that he will pull strings if he's allowed to dictate games. And if he was injured for a considerable amount of time, I struggle to think we've got a player of his quality. We've got good midfielders, but I don't know if we've got anyone who's quite as good as him. And then Bonatini's our only real out-and-out striker. We're playing with a lot of number 10-esque players around him, like Jota and Cavalero and Costa. They're sort of wide players who like to play in and around a striker. So those two you're kind of looking at and thinking, oh, are we a bit light? And in January, I expect us to do business again, because this our owners and this connection we've got with George Mendes, they're very serious about getting into the Premier League. So I expect us, even if we do have injuries, to go and replace those players. But looking at the bench, yeah, I mean, he changed three or four players against Norwich. The team looked just as good. We went to Man City in the League Cup. He changed pretty much the whole team. And we're the only team to take Man City to game goalless, took them through to extra time goalless. Could have won that game. I'm not saying we're as good as Man City. Don't get me wrong by any stretch of the imagination. But I'm just saying that digging in and getting that result with our reserves showed that there's a good amount of depth in the squad. But you just don't know. It's like the Championship is a difficult division. But I just think we have got the best squad, because I think it was always a case of, were these foreign players we've signed going to bed in and be able to play in the Championship? And, you know, over a third of the way through the season now, you're looking at it thinking they probably can. But the next month or two, going through the really nasty winter months, that will be pivotal. I think if we're still in the top two come January, Feb, then I think you're probably a good indication that we're going to be there at the end of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think sort of the real test, as you said there, will come sort of over these winter months. Quite a lot of sort of players from Portugal and mainland Europe that won't be sort of used to playing in that weather, especially with sort of the games coming thick and fast over Christmas as well. So I think if you do come sort of out of Christmas, as you said, top one or two, I definitely think you'll be up there come the end of the season.
Yeah, what I was going to say was, it's quite interesting on the Friday, I had a laugh that quite a lot of the lads, Portuguese lads, are all in the short sleeve tops, which I thought was pretty impressive. I was getting ready to count the gloves and the Under Armour and all that. But so I thought, I bet that's a statement of intent. I bet, you know, they're that kind of group. They'd probably be saying, we're not going to do that. You know, but whether that's actually, it might have just been pure coincidence. They'll probably all be suited up next time. But,
yeah. Well, sort of to touch on a team that obviously aren't on a good run of form now, sort of moving into Preston. It's been another disappointing week. It's sort of slowly starting to turn into sort of a big issue now. Obviously, every team loses games for the season, and we'd had a couple of defeats over sort of the last sort of 2 weeks. But this week really has been probably the worst week of the season for us. Last weekend, we got beat by Brentford, which we covered on the show last week, which was quite a disappointing performance in the nature of the defeat. But then we went on to Wednesday night in front of the Sky cameras, and sort of, I have to be sort of careful how much sort of I do get on their backs, because obviously we've got this defensive crisis at the moment. So obviously you've got players playing out of position, and sort of the settled team has been disrupted. But
no, get on their backs. It's fine. Yeah. Be annoyed.
Well, the first half against Aston Villa especially was just poor. You know, probably the two best defenders were the sort of the two makeshift defenders that we had in the first half. Well, I say makeshift, Andy Boyle coming in for his first start of the season, and then Callum Woods playing at centre back when he's a right back, looked sort of solid, even though we went in 2-0 down. The first one was, you know, a well worked goal by them, which I think if they'd have played sort of that move against majority of teams in the division, they would have carved them open the way they did to us. So, you know, that first goal, sort of the quality's on show there, and you'd expect that from Aston Villa with the squad that they've got. The second goal, awful pass by Ben Pearson in the middle of our own half, when he was sort of the deepest line midfielder, gave the ball straight to them and they took full advantage of that. And when you make those mistakes against the teams that have sort of the attacking players that an Aston Villa do, you're always going to get punished. Got to half time and two of our defenders, sort of as the way it's been going recently, had picked up knocks in the first half, and that was them done. I think they're both out for about a month or so now. Josh Earl and Callum Woods. So we go into the second half with Alan Brown playing at left centre back, Andy Boyle and Kevin O'Connor making their first starts of the season, and Darnell Fisher is the only sort of regular defender. So it was quite weird. Sort of the second half was the better defensive performance when we had this sort of patched together defence. Didn't create a whole lot going forward. I thought John Terry and James Chester at the back were the two best players on the park. John Terry's experience, you know, he doesn't have the legs anymore, but James Chester complements him sort of so well in that defence for Aston Villa that John Terry can literally sit there, read the game, and when you read the game as well as he does, you don't need to be the quickest. He made it look so easy, and he made Hugh Gill really look just like an ordinary striker who sort of was lacking confidence. So it was disappointing in the Aston Villa game, but obviously with the injuries and playing someone like Aston Villa, it's always going to be difficult, and we never seem to do well on the Sky cameras anyway, which, you know, carried on. But the real disappointment was yesterday against Ipswich. Before the game, it's announced that Sean Maguire, probably along with Hugh Gill, our most creative player this season, is going to be out for 4 months after having surgery on his hamstring issue that's troubled him ever since the Fulham game. I think with regards to him, he's come over from the League of Ireland where their season is panned out differently to ours. So obviously he's finished up sort of July, start of August time in the League of Ireland, not had an off season and gone straight into the season with us and played sort of nearly every game so far. So I think with regards to him, it's sort of all that football catching up on him. Played in the Europa League as well, which he'd never done. So he's played a hell of a lot of football over the last calendar year. And I do think, obviously, it's never nice to wish an injury on anyone, but if there was one player who needs a rest and, you know, deserves to sit out for a few months, I think he will benefit from that. And he'll come back after Christmas sort of raring to go again and almost be like a new signing when we do get him back. We have quite a lot of attacking players sort of in the squad. It's defensively where we're light. So obviously his creativity will be missed, but we've got players who can come in and do a job who've been sort of itching for a chance. So it's about them now really sort of proving it and sort of taking that chance. But to get into the game, the first half, and I was chatting to Benjamin Bloom, who's the Ipswich Town fan who comes on this podcast from time to time. So we were in agreement that between us, that's the worst half of Championship football either of us have seen all season. It was absolutely awful, and it sort of summed it up. Ipswich getting a free kick right on the stroke of half time, and I don't know what Maxwell was doing. He just completely went the wrong way. Wasn't a penalty, sort of where he's got to make a split decision. It was a free kick where, you know, the ball comes from sort of a bit of a way out from the edge of the box and completely wrong footed him, and it wasn't even in the corner. It was kind of sort of central in the goal, and disappointing sort of to concede on the stroke of half time. But the second half, Ipswich played a lot better. Sort of, I've got to give them credit, but we were absolutely shocking. It looked like, and obviously, we have got the defensive injury, so we are going to be sort of weak at the back. But even the forward players just didn't look interested. There was no real sort of determination. And, you know, when you're in a bad run of form, you're looking for the players to stand up and be counted and really roll their sleeves up. And even if you get beat, you know, putting in a good performance, and there's some positives then to take and build on, but there was none whatsoever in the second half. you know, at the end of the game, sort of the few hundred who had made the trip were sort of hoping that the players had shown them that recognition, and all the players just straight off down the tunnel, bar, I think, Paul Gallagher, who has been with us a long time now, and you can see it sort of means a hell of a lot to him. Everyone else straight down the tunnel, and that really sort of summed up the performance yesterday. Alex Neil's since come out and apologised, but, you know, it does leave a sour taste in the fans' mouth who've sort of made a 10-hour round trip to get down to Ipswich and watch that. But, you know, that's all I'll really say on that. We're going to the international break now and hopefully get players back fit. The next game we've got, you know, if you're in a bad run of form at the moment, sort of with the league table the way it is, Bolton at home is our next game. And, you know, it's probably the perfect game to, even if we only scrape it, get a win on the board and stop this rot and stop us, you know, free falling down the table. Sort of, I have to be careful, obviously, with started the season so well and it's kind of shifted our expectations a little bit, but we're sort of around the point now where at the start of the season, you know, Alex Neil coming in as a new manager, we thought we would be. So it is disappointing, but, you know, we're still sort of looking at the table, a good sort of 9 or 10 points clear of the relegation zone. And I do think we will be all right once we get these players back fit and get out of this poor run of form. But, you know, it needs to happen sooner rather than later. Otherwise, you'll be sort of, even though it's still early in the season, talking about sort of a relegation battle and sort of battling to stay up. But obviously there's no games next weekend with it being international. So we'll just do a quick preview on obviously the games after the international break. Start with you first, James. You've got Aston Villa at home. Obviously you go into the game sort of similar to us, not in terms of sort of losing the last sort of few games, but a bit inconsistent. So how do you see the game going and what would be your sort of score prediction sort of now, even though it's a good sort of week and a half, 2 weeks away?
Yeah, and sadly, John Terry's not going to be able to make it. It would have been his first game back since that whole massive kind of saga that occurred with Ferdinand, because he got injured yesterday.
I think he broke his toe, didn't he? I think was the
what a shame.
I know.
but I mean, you know, I when you guys were talking about squads and Bruce has got obviously a lot of experience in getting teams up, I did think that Villa are probably the closest in terms of, or they might be a slightly more aging squad, but are closer to Wolves than anyone else, maybe, and they've got a good manager in place and there or thereabouts. For QPR against Villa, we've been good at home this season, so, you know, it's just a matter of kind of just trying to maintain that and carry that away. But Villa have also, although they lost recently, but until then they were on a really kind of good long run. I think 7 or 8 matches unbeaten, and they were doing well. So I always want QPR to win, but I think it's a draw. And we haven't had a draw at home for a couple of games. It sort of I think it's coming that way. I'd love to see QPR win, but I think Villa have got a kind of a very strong squad and a manager that really knows this level.
Yeah, and same to you, Thomas. Obviously, you're in fantastic form at the moment, top of the league. You go away to Reading, who are a bit hit and miss this season. How do you see the game going, and what would be your score predictions for the game?
I'd like to think it would be follow a similar pattern to a lot of the away games this season. You expect Reading, as the home team, to come out and be on the front foot, but then Wolves hopefully absorb some of that and then be able to pick them off on the break, effectively. I am a bit concerned by it. They've got a couple of ex-Wolves players. They've got Dave Edwards, who's at Wolves for nearly a decade, scores a lot of goals from midfield, and Bodvarsson in the forward as well. Every team probably thinks this, but every ex-player we seem to come up against seems to do something against us. And so I'm fearful of that. And they've got two attack-minded players in their team who are both were turfed out in the summer, basically, and told they weren't good enough to be part of this squad that's going to push for promotion. So they'll have the bit between their teeth. Reading are coming good again now. They had a difficult start to the season, performed really badly, but 2 wins and a good win at Derby, that was yesterday, against an informed Derby side. They're going to be coming into that game with their tails up, looking at Wolves as a big scalp. So it's got a lot of danger on that game. But I think if both teams play to their maximum, Wolves win the game. I think it just tallies with what I've saying about the squad. As good as Wolves squad is, though, I mean, I would qualify that by saying every game is so close. You know, we haven't had many really comprehensive wins this season. We've still been edging teams out a lot of the time. I'm not arrogant enough to think we're just going to go and steamroller anyone, but certainly a difficult game. But then they're all difficult in the Championship, so I would still be backing Wolves to win. Probably again, odd by the odd goal, 2-1 maybe. But yeah, a win would be a very good result there.
Yeah, definitely. And I've already touched on it, but yeah, we've got Bolton away. I believe it's on TV, which, you know, never sort of bodes well for us with it being on the Friday night. So I'd imagine
it's not a good time to be playing then, is it? It's because what?
You know, no, yeah, I've obviously they've just come off the bottom and sort of looking at their run, they're unbeaten in four. They've had some good draws in there, obviously against QPR, Fulham, Sunderland as well, and then they beat Norwich yesterday.
QPR so. And Sunderland though, QPR away, that's a gimme. So yeah. You know, so you can scratch that one off. I'm trying to be positive for you.
Yeah, well, so yeah, they've had those draws and then a good win against Norwich yesterday at home. So, you know, they'll come into the game full of confidence, and they're sort of on a little run of avoiding defeat. So, sort of on paper, it's a good game for us playing a team that are in the relegation zone. Coming off the international break, hopefully we can get a few players back. We're sort of almost down to the academy of the lads now, which, you know, it'll be a good experience for them, but it's sort of last resort. But yeah, we never do well on Sky, but hopefully, you know, we've got to break that jinx sometime. So why not against Bolton on the Friday night? I think it'll be a close game. I don't think we'll sort of walk it. Sort of as many sort of would probably predict us to, with us being sort of mid-table and then being in the relegation zone. But as long as, you know, we can even get a draw, I'd take now, just to stop this rot of four defeats on the bounce and conceding sort of two or more goals in each game. Yeah, if we can get a draw, sort of my heart says that we'll win, but head says draw. So if I was to sort of put a bet on it, I'd say a score draw would probably be the result I'd go for. But with that, we're out of time. Cheers for joining me today, guys. If you two wanted to let everyone know where you can be reached and any projects that you're involved in, now would be a good time.
Cheers. It's James Evans. Follow me at Jim E. Evans on Twitter. And I run We Are QPR TV, which is on YouTube. And also We Are QPR TV on Twitter is the tag there. So do give me a follow. Cheers.
Yeah, yeah. And just for me, just for everything runs through the Wolves blog account. So just you can get us the site is wolvesblog.com. Twitter is at wolvesblog. And Facebook is facebook.com/wolvesblog.
Yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter at @_JamesVickers. I write for Preston North End fan blog, which is at Deepdale Digest. And I also, sort of as you've probably guessed by now, host a podcast. We have a new Twitter account as well. So if you can give that a follow, that's at Championship Pod. And the new episodes each week will be uploaded on there, as well as sort of a load of other interesting sort of facts and polls about the Championship as well. So definitely check that out. Cheers for joining me today, guys. Look forward to having you on again, and we'll see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.